This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. In a new paper, economists at Northwestern, the University of Michigan, and the Census Bureau looked at how the education levels of a person's parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents can predict their own education levels. Their analysis found that intergenerational mobility, social mobility, the chances you'll rise above your circumstances, was 20% lower than suggested by previous studies. In other words, equality is more persistent across generations than we thought. Joining us is one of the researchers who worked on that study, Catherine Massey. She's an assistant research scientist at the Population Study Center at the U of M. So what does this research show that goes beyond previous research on social mobility?
Well, a lot of the research that we're seeing in the economic and sociology world looks at really parent-to-child transmission of wealth, inequality more generally, income, and education attainment. And what our research really does is it extends it another generation or two backward to see if we don't include grandparents, how does that affect our understanding of social mobility more broadly?
Why that approach? Give me an example of why that's better.
One really great way to think about just inequality and social mobility in general was proposed by Ross Chetty, and he has this analogy where he says, picture the income distribution as a ladder. And then intergenerational mobility is a measure of how likely a child is to go from their parent's step of the ladder to the next step of the ladder. And then inequality is a measure of how far away the steps are on the ladder. So if we think about how important that is, that the ability to go from one rung of the ladder to the next, if we're systematically understating our ability for our society, for children to move from one ladder to the next, that's going to have profound effects on how we conceptualize inequality and mobility in the country as a whole.
Well, I mean, we've always been told, you know, that our chances are good. If we pull up ourselves by our own bootstraps, that if we work hard, maybe a little luck, that we can attain just about anything. And this research shows not so fast.
That's right. I think there is this belief in America that we're able to tolerate some measure of inequality because there's belief that even if things are unequal, we'll be able to move ourselves up. But what we're finding is that it's really worse than we thought, that mobility is not as high in America today, and it really hasn't been getting any worse or better, but it's still pretty high, and it's higher than we've previously thought it was.
Now, is this educational attainment? Is this family wealth? Is it a combination of the two? What did you specifically look at?
We specifically looked at education attainment, and we did this for several reasons. So a lot of times it's really difficult to observe parents and children, particularly the children when they're adults, because you don't want to observe their income when they're a 15-year-old living with their parent. You want to observe the child's income when they're older, their education is complete, and they're earning. Well, this gets really hard when you go further back in time. And when you're looking at grandparents' generations, the grandparents of today's children, you're really looking at the 1930s and 1940s. And data is really scarce at that point in time.
Sure. And you're going back as far as the great-grandparents, which makes it more difficult.
Right. So we're going all the way back to 1910. And when you're looking back that far, you have problems with how do you measure income? Is it measured accurately? Is it measured at the same point in time for the parent and the child? So there's a literature that says it's important to try to measure income of the parents and the children when they're about the same age. Because you can imagine that on the parents, where they are in their life cycle, might be earning more. Like a 55-year-old man might earn more than a 35-year-old man. And that's true for the sons as well. So if we look at education, we don't have these constraints. Basically, your education is fixed by the time you're 25 years old, and it doesn't change much for most people for the rest of their lives. So this really eased that data constraint for us.
So I was reading in the Washington Post, which did a blog on your study, and it gave the example of there's a banker, makes good money. That banker's child decides, that's fine for him, but I'm going to be a poet. And then the grandchild, the son or daughter of that poet, says, you know, I think I'm going to be a banker. So is there any benefit to the grandchild from the grandparent in your research?
Well, I'd certainly say that our research shows that in this case, if you only looked at the parent and child, this one little blip of the parent being a poet would definitely skew our understanding of mobility in the U.S. We don't research how the grandparents affect grandchildren. Those channels we've left for future research. But certainly you can imagine that that grandchild would benefit from the grandparents' social networks, their work networks, their own wealth and education.
we're really kind of in a place where all that hope and aspiration that we have, if we just do all the right things, we'll be okay. It sounds like your research says that's not necessarily the case in the majority of families.
It's an important caveat for the research that we're not really looking at causal explanations. We're just looking at the relationship, and we are finding a relationship for grandparents, and we don't know if it's because grandparents directly influence their grandchildren or if there are cultural or values that are passed on from one generation to the next. It could even be measurement error, but the fact that we're finding something for the grandparents says that mobility overall is lower than we thought it was.
I want to ask you about another study that was issued a couple of years ago, and it basically looked at the surnames of families. And it went back centuries to see what the status was of certain surnames then and through the centuries since and what they are now. And it came to kind of the same conclusion your research did. Families don't have that much social mobility. Are these apples and oranges or just a nice convenient coincidence for your study? Tell me about the two studies and compare them.
Well, the work that's been done on surnames is definitely groundbreaking. It's exciting research, but I think it looks more at what kind of wealth persistence is there across generations and how is that characterized by your surname. And in general, what we find is that persistence of wealth across families, that is quite a bit more persistent than if you look at income or if you look at education attainment. So Gregory Clark finds that it takes up to 10 generations for basically any advantage of your ancestors to wash out. What we're finding is it's closer to 5 to 6, but this is more than the research has found before that says that it takes about 4 to 5 generations.
This might be a separate issue, but with growing inequality between the very rich and the rest of us, how does your research fit into that?
I mean, these ideas are very intertwined. Of course, in America, I think there's this belief that we accept a little bit of inequality with the idea that with hard work, we can bring ourselves out of poverty. We can make a better life for ourselves. But if that's not really the case, then we need to examine policies that may enable a little bit more social mobility and reduce inequality.
That's Catherine Massey, an assistant research scientist at the Population Studies Center at the University of Michigan. She, along with Joseph Ferry at Northwestern University and Jonathan Rothbaum of the U.S. Census Bureau, just published new research that suggests social mobility, upward mobility, if you will, might be a little more limited than we've previously thought. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.